Today on Maine Calling, plant-based diets, then and now. Maybe you've seen the magazine articles or social media reels espousing a plant-forward way of eating. That phrase may be trendy, but there is nothing new about the practice of eating mainly plants. Leonardo da Vinci, Mahatma Gandhi, the ancient Greek philosopher Pythagoras are all believed to have been vegetarians. And here in Maine, there is a long history of vegetarianism and plant-centered eating. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we learn some of that history. The influencers, if you will, who championed a plant-focused diet here in Maine and even caused a stir. And we'll get some practical tips about how to shift to eating vegan, vegetarian, or flexitarian with more fruits, veggies, grains, and legumes on your plate. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn, and by Maine Health, where care teams provide expert, coordinated care focused on your overall wellness to help you be your healthiest self. MaineHealth.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. These days, many people are trying to eat more plants and less meat. But that's really nothing new. Today, we'll learn about being vegan, vegetarian, or flexitarian, and why Maine has long been known for the plant-based lifestyle. Joining me, Avery Yale Camilla, who is a journalist, food writer, vegan, and founder of the Maine Vegetarian History Project. She had a long-time column, The Vegan Kitchen, in the Portland Press Herald. She was also a guest co-curator of a current exhibit at the Maine Historical Society, Maine's Untold Vegetarian History. Also with us for the hour, Christine Burns, Ruta Levage, food writer, culinary expert. What? How do you say it, Christine?
I say culinary.
Okay, thank you. Author of Green Plate Special, and she writes about local food topics for the Portland Press Herald. We invite you to join the conversation. Are you moving towards a plant-based diet? Are you a long-time vegan? Or have you considered it? Have you tried it? Share your comments and questions. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Well, such an interesting topic, Avery. I can't wait to hear about some of the early influencers when it came to eating a plant-based diet. But I want to ask you kind of a broader question. When you think about today and the reasons that people may choose to be vegetarian or vegan or even just a little more plant forward, I guess the phrase is, and you look back at history and the reasons that people chose, are they the same or has there been a bit of a shift?
Well, thank you so much for having me and doing this show. And I would say both. There's a through line on some of the reasons, and some of them are different, you know, that reflect the times and, you know, what was going on. So, you know, health is one of those through line concerns. So we see that, you know, throughout, that there's always, you know, a link to health in pursuits of vegetarianism. And we certainly see that today here, you know, in January, when everyone's looking to kickstart a new year in a positive way. And, you know, the Veganuary movement, you know, that's gone global now, has, you know, really, really taken off at the beginning of January here. So it's there are through lines. And one other thing that we see is that places that have a real rich, deep history of vegetarianism have a strong vegetarian movement in that geographic space today. So, you know, this continues, you know, so areas where people are like, oh yeah, there's a lot of, you know, vegetarians there. Well, there probably were a lot of them in the past too.
I know you've got some great characters that you can tell us about, but I'm going to turn to Christine for just a minute. We're throwing around these terms, vegan, vegetarian, flexitarian, plant forward. Christine, I'm going to
tell you my rudimentary understanding, and you can correct me and build on that. My understanding is someone who's a vegan eats no animal products, not even things like honey or eggs, and a vegetarian sort of stays away from meat and chicken. What about a flexitarian or somebody who's plant forward? Tell us what those mean and tell me if I've got the first two right.
Okay. I do. Avery would be more the expert on the veganism, but I think you've got that definition correct. And vegetarian is a little more flexible. Sometimes there's vegetarians that will eat eggs and cheese in smaller amounts. And then there's pescatarians who follow a primarily vegetarian diet, but will also pull in seafood. Flexitarian is a term that was coined by Don Jackson Blaettner back in 2009, I think. I'm sorry, it was in the early 2000s. Her book called The Flexitarian Diet came out in 2009. And that is really just a way to mix flexible and vegetarian into flexitarian. And so she divided that into three levels. So there's a beginner that eats about 6 to 8 meatless meals a week, and up to about 26 ounces of protein. And then that moves through advanced up to expert, which is 15 meatless meals and about 9 ounces of meat, chicken, and seafood a week.
Okay, so you're talking about people trying to have meatless meals as opposed to people trying to have meals in which vegetables are at the center, but there might be a little meat. I'm thinking about things like stir fries or curries or things like that. That's a different thing.
It can be both. I think the depends on the level of cook you are. Like if you know the secrets to by adding beans or having mushrooms in the mix or any other food product that is going to boost the umami of a meal, then, you know, that's why that she also puts in the ounce of meat per week. So, you know, the average American currently eats about 300 pounds of meat in a year.
That's almost a pound a day.
It is almost a pound a day. Yes. We're only second behind Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. Yes. And another high meat eating is New Zealand. I think we're the top three. Mm-hmm. We're in the top three. So if, and I mean, it's not that in the health discussion, you know, the CDC says that Americans should be eating 40% less meat than they do for their health. Personally, I shoot for a 60% reduction from that 300 pound mark. And that means about eating about 5 to 5.5 ounces of meat in a given day. You know, sometimes I bank that especially if I'm planning a meal out, because I feel like restaurant portions of animal proteins are larger than what I would serve at home.
All right. All right. Yeah. So, and this is a big trend, isn't it? To move toward trying to, I mean, all you have to do is look on social media to see all sorts of really great ideas about how to move toward more of a plant forward approach. Avery, though, I want to backtrack a little bit and hear about, because you've done so much research. I want to hear about some of these people that you've discovered. And one is way back in the early 1700s here in Maine, when there were only a few settlers, but there was already a well-known vegetarian. Tell me about him.
Well, so he's well-known, but his vegetarianism is not. And he would be Father Sebastian Rall, who was a Jesuit priest here in Maine in an Abenaki Christian town called Nanransowak that we today know as Norridgewock. And we know it because there was a terrible, terrible massacre that occurred there. And the British descended on the town and they killed women and children. It's horrible. They killed him. They were after him. Why were they after him? He was provoking the British because he was on the side of the Abenaki. And he was complaining to British officials in Boston about the common Abenaki practice of allowing their cattle and other livestock out to destroy the Abenaki cornfields and other agricultural land, their food supply. So we're talking about food security, you know, in the 1700s. I mean, this was a tough time for everybody living in Maine then, because can you imagine trying to like procure your dinner? It's an all-day affair to make dinner in 1722. You know, there's nothing that you buy in a store. So when you lose your whole crop, you know, you're probably, your town is probably going to go next. So this was a tactic that's used all over New England to gain land. Father Rawls complaining about this gets massacred. But why am I calling him the earliest vegetarian that I've been able to uncover in Maine? It's because in 1722, 2 years before he's killed, he writes a letter to a nephew in France. He's from France. And at that time in France, vegetarianism is on the rise. And it's particularly popular in the Christian monasteries, which he's comes out of. He's a Jesuit priest. He's a missionary sent to the New World to colonize. And so he's a controversial figure in Maine history. He writes this 1722 letter and he says to his nephew, he's living in the woods in Maine and the only things he eats are cornmeal porridge that he grows and grinds himself, sometimes sweetened with a little bit of maple sugar, and then also nuts and roots. That's it. That's all he's eating. So that is a vegan diet. Now, the word vegan does not exist until 1944. The word vegetarian isn't coined until the middle of the 1800s. So, like, there's no way to call him a vegetarian in 1722 because that word does not exist. But 1722 is also when founding father Benjamin Franklin becomes a vegetarian. And So vegetarianism is in the air in the 1700s in America. There's some other examples too, but it's just not well documented or recorded. There's certainly no archive of, you know, people weren't talking about food the way we are now. So it's difficult to find, but he certainly is an interesting early example.
And I want to jump forward a century and ask you about Sylvester Graham. He caused a riot. Tell us about that.
So zoom ahead, 1834, we now have a celebrity vegetarian in America. His name is Sylvester Graham. The newspapers of the time, so newspapers are kind of a new thing too, and they're everywhere and they're popular and they have all kinds of scandalous things to tell us about, but they share news too. So Sylvester Graham is such a celebrity in 1834 that you don't even need to use his first name. People, you say Graham, they know who you're talking about, okay? They know what his message is. Super popular. So he comes to Maine, first gives a month of lectures in Brunswick, goes super well. The governor of Maine chairs his lecture series. People love it. All the professors from Bowdoin are there. And, you know, at the end, there's commentary that the butchers in the meat market really thought that they were going to go out of business because so many people adopted vegetarianism afterwards. So the next month, he shows up down in Portland. And at first, like, the reporting's really excited, like, Graham's in town, oh my gosh, here's the lecture he's giving tonight, and all this positive sort of press. But then something happens. The mood sort of turns in the press. And we see some satire beginning to appear. And then we see an ad for an anti-Graham lecture that's going to take place at City Hall. Same time Graham's speaking, just around the corner in the Temple Street Chapel, located really close to where the Nickelodeon cinema is today. And City Hall would have been in Monument Square. So presumably the men who attended the anti-Graham lecture got all fired up and then marched down the street to the temple, threw rocks and bricks through the windows of the church, stopped the lecture. It was a lecture that he was giving just to women. Now, that's a crucial point, because in the reporting on this riot, the reporting is all over the country. All the newspapers pick up on this, this agitation, this riot that happens in Portland. This is a big deal. The 1830s were filled with riots of all kinds. So, you know, this was something people were reporting on. It was a cultural thing happening. One happened in Portland. And so they don't know why. Why did it happen? What happened? So everybody knows Sylvester Graham promotes vegetarianism. So that's what they blame it on. He's known for his Graham bread. He didn't invent that. It's just what they call whole wheat bread because he told everybody to eat whole wheat bread. So then the bakers called it Graham bread. And so the editors and the reporters, the writers were saying, well, you know, obviously there's going to be a riot. If this guy's going to show up in town and he's going to tell the husbands that they should be eating bran bread and vegetarian food, clearly people are going to riot, you know? So that was kind of what they thought. And they're just like dismissed it. Like, yeah, that's what you expect. But it's even more interesting than that. It wasn't really, I mean, I'm sure people were offended by the vegetarianism. They still are today. So it's a, you know, it's a controversial thing, but there was a really, there was something else going on. He gave a whole series of lectures that were based on temperance because vegetarianism was part of temperance in the 1830s. Mm-hmm. And one of his lectures was about women's rights and their reproductive rights and their reproductive anatomy. Super controversial back then. That's not something women should know. Women have no legal rights, no legal standing. They are, you know, owned by their husbands or their fathers. So this is controversial stuff that he was saying. He only gave the lecture to mothers, which is what it was called, three times, once in Portland, once in Boston, and once in Providence. There was a riot every time. The lecture does not exist. He must have destroyed it because his other lecture notes do exist. And this one was so controversial. So modern scholars have looked at this and said, ah, wait, I don't think it was the vegetarianism. It was the women's rights that really provoked this mob and got them going.
So interesting. Christine, I'm going to seize on something that Avery said, which is celebrity. Graham was a celebrity. And now, of course, we hear about a lot of celebrities who are either vegans or vegetarians. And I'm looking at a list right now. Woody Harrelson, of course, Paul McCartney, Zendaya, Alec Baldwin, and Brad Pitt. And I'm wondering, Christine, when you think about these movements, whether it's plant forward or vegetarianism or flexitarianism, how influential are these celebrities talking about what they eat?
Oh, I think it depends on what realm you're talking about. I think that if you're in the realm of, you know, appearances, obviously to maintain, you know, their in such a manner that they're going to be pictured inside of defined thin roles in movies and in fashion. I think if you look at, I'm in a media when that magazine tends to do, oh, what, you know, Willie Harrison ate in a day. I think people who are more interested in the food than in the celebrity are going to be like, why do I care what he eats? He has probably a cook cooking for him. He probably has an unlimited budget. And how does that apply to me as a cook who is trying to reduce and fits my budget, my family? So I think it's kind of like, it's a question of versus where you come down on preparing food every day.
All right. Well, you are cutting in and out a little bit, Christine. We'll see if we can troubleshoot that during the break. And also, I want to get some really practical tips from both of you, some ideas about moving toward a more either vegetarian, vegan, flexitarian, plant-forward diet, maybe some easy meal ideas or snack ideas. First, though, we're going to go to a break. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org or find us on social media. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're talking about the spectrum of plant-based diets and learning about the history of vegetarianism in Maine. My guest, Christine Burns Rudalevich, who writes about food and cooking and eats a plant-forward diet, and Avery Yale Camilla, a journalist and food writer with the Maine Vegetarian History Project, and she is a vegan. We invite you to join the conversation. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. I got an email from Lynn. She writes, "We are meat eaters, but we were inspired by Tom Hanks to have a meatless Monday every week. It's painless. I have two comments to make to fellow meat eaters. One, I continue to make meals with meat, but now I use much less in a recipe than I used to. You can get a lot of flavor out of a very small amount. And two, we are now confirmed fans of Beyond Meat. Their burger is the best plant-based we've found, and their Beyond Steak tips were delicious." So Lynn, thanks for those tips. And Avery, I'm wondering, is it easier than it used to be to transition?
It is so much easier now. I mean, it's so much easier even than it was 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. But talk about 100 years ago, 200 years ago. You know, people were doing this. It was super difficult back then. Now there are so many products. I'm so glad that Lynn mentioned the Beyond products, because those are really interesting, because, you know, they've gotten a lot of bad press, and there are forces and, you know, people who don't want those to succeed for, you know, market reasons. But we need those to succeed, because those are really helpful. If people like meat, if they like the texture of meat, if they like the flavor of meat, those are replacements that hit those notes. If you're a longtime vegetarian who doesn't like meat or the flavor of meat, those are going to be terrible for you. Those are not meant for you as a vegetarian. They're meant for people who like meat. And so if somebody would eat a hamburger, then they should get a Beyond Burger. That's an upgrade. You know, if you're eating a veggie burger and you go to a Beyond Burger, well, you know, it is more processed. The studies are showing that it's not the same as processed meats. Processed meats, you know, you all of a sudden have, you know, you're basically the cancer risk of a cigarette. You know, if you're talking deli meats, that's how they're rated now. So, you know, there's different risk levels there, and a processed Beyond Burger is not the same as a processed hamburger. So those are excellent, and they make it so easy for people to, you know, make small changes. You don't have to become a vegetarian. You can just make swaps, like, oh, instead of having hamburgers tonight, we're going to have Beyond Burgers instead. That's great. You know, they have that same smell. Like, they smell so much like hamburgers. To me, a longtime vegetarian, I have to like run out of the kitchen when somebody's cooking them, because they, you know, they have that smell. So it's much easier now in terms of product availability. You know, there's vegan cheeses that melt and, you know, do different things that they certainly didn't do years ago. So it's a whole different landscape.
And Christine, another thing Lynn said is that she is just maybe using less meat. I mean, is that a tip too, to maybe you see a recipe, cut it in half? I know a lot of people do that with baking and sugar. When they're trying to cut down on sugar, they just cut it in half and see what happens. And then I think you mentioned mushrooms before. Tell us these tips about taking a favorite recipe and maybe sort of making it a little more plant forward or completely vegetarian.
Well, sometimes it's an addition of a flavor component, and sometimes it's just like, if you look back, probably cook a pound roast to feed four people. No, a pound roast to feed six people. And I said this to my dad. In my family, we're all very tall. I think I have five nephews who are over 6 feet, 3 inches. So my father will buy a 12-ounce steak for each of them. And I think that his grandmother would just turn over in her grave just to look at the the expense of that prospect. But I have those same nephews to my house, and I will plan on 3 or 4 ounces of a steak, but I'll pre-cut it. If you cut a steak on the bias, it looks like it's bigger, it's thinner, and you can get more pieces out of it. And just putting it on a plate arranged cut makes a meat eater plenty there, as opposed to just plopping that 10-ounce steak on their plate because they're going to eat the whole thing. And then you fluff up the meal with, you know, roasted potatoes that are crispy and browned to get that same flavor. You saute some onions and the umami flavor in those, and then you add that to the mix. So it's tricks of not missing that amount of meat, more than cutting it out completely, that I think brings people from an absolutely strident meat eater toward accepting less meat and more vegetables on the plate.
And Avery, I think a lot of people, I know I've certainly tried this in the past, will just say, okay, I'm going to put tofu in where there was chicken before. And and that's not necessarily a very satisfying solution. So why don't you give us some better ideas for taking an old recipe and updating it?
Well, I think that that's a great example, because tofu is a wonderful food product, and we've got a lovely Maine-based producer. So we're so lucky to have such a high level of tofu being made locally. So yes, people should use it, but you need to know how to use it. And you don't just replace it, you know, with chicken automatically. You could maybe, you know, you could pan fry it, you could bake it, and then maybe sub it in, but it's not going to taste anything like chicken, because it's not chicken, it's tofu. So tofu takes on flavors and sauces. It's great for sauces. So like if you want to use a barbecue sauce or, you know, an Asian stir fry sauce, perfect. What would be a perfect substitute for chicken would be one of the plant-based meats that are available. Beyond has one. There's all kinds of them that are in the supermarkets now. So all the supermarkets have them. You can look at the, you know, frozen section is often where they are. Those are really great, because it's something you can just easily buy off the shelf. You don't have to like make it and know how to use tofu. You don't have to do anything. It's just like using, you know, something you're already familiar with. So it's that familiarity that really helps people, because you don't have to learn a new skill. You know, you don't have to learn how to make a new recipe. You can just make your familiar recipes you like. Like you can make tacos. If people like tacos and burritos and pizza, those are all really easy recipes to swap in, you know, plant-based, you know, items for meats and cheeses. So really, really easy to do with all the different options that are available in supermarkets now.
I'm going to go to Barry calling from Portland. Hi, Barry. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call today. And I just want to say, I'm a senior citizen, and about 9 years ago, somebody gave me the book, How Not to Die. And so I began to follow a whole food plant-based diet. And I have to confess that early in my life, my first career as a nutritionist dietitian. So I've always been very food conscious. And within 3 months of going on a whole food plant-based diet, my cholesterol dropped 30%.
Wow.
My triglycerides dropped 50%. And my physician was rather shocked and said that I had the lowest inflammation level in his practice. And inflammation is what's behind cancer and a lot of the diseases that kill the top 10 people. And as a senior citizen, I'm on no meds at all. And I just think that I have no intention to change. And I think this is also a really easy way to make a positive decrease in my carbon footprint. And it's absolutely enjoyable. I have a ton of cookbooks. And my awareness for eating meat started when I was younger and a kid and had a pet pig and realized that she was as smart, if not smarter, than my dog at the time. So I'm just really happy with this lifestyle. And
Barry, I want to ask you before I let you go, if you have a favorite meal, whether a lunch or a dinner, something that you make all the time and want to sort of tell others what you do.
Actually, that's a really good question, because a few years ago, I had done macrobiotic diet a long time ago, and I had a pressure cooker. And for my birthday, I bought a couple of very good German pressure cookers, which most people do the Instapot, which it can do exactly the same thing. But I felt, since I was familiar with pressure cookers, I would. And almost the majority of nights in the week, I put my large pressure cooker with a little water in the bottom and a steamer basket, and I begin to layer fresh mushrooms, fresh onion, garlic, tempeh or tofu or beans, and then other vegetables with sweet potatoes, and then kind of a little top layer of kale or collard greens. And I just briefly steam them for probably about 6 minutes, and then I pop them over on a plate and use a little bit of an olive oil and vinegar dressing with some black cumin in it. And it's gorgeous, and it's delicious, and it's incredibly satisfying.
Well, Barry, thanks so much for calling in and sharing your perspective. Let's see, we'll go to Edie, who's calling from Blue Hill. Hi, Edie, go ahead.
Hi. Let's see, I'm trying to see if I'm not on speakerphone.
You sound good. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm 76. I'm in great health, no medications. I've been a vegan since 2001. I love to cook. I find it all delicious. And I felt a kind of a weight off my shoulders that I didn't realize was there because of concern for animals. So I love that. I just feel lighter. And some of the things that influenced me, I took a 3-day class at a vegan restaurant in San Francisco called Millennium, and that was in January of 2001. I learned a lot there. Then here in Maine, I saw a film, which is a really harsh film. I'm not necessarily recommending seeing it, but it's called Witness, and it was shown at the Institute for Humane Education in Surrey, Maine, right near where I live, and it really had a strong impact because it's about some of the cruelty that animals experience in factory farming and so forth. And I just feel, you know, there's a point where if you're going to eat an animal, you know you're killing it, and that's hard. I love to share recipes of a private Facebook page. One of the things that people often really miss is cheese. There's actually an opiate in milk to persuade the calf to keep nursing. So we have that longing for cheese and dairy products sometimes when we stop. I loved whipped cream. I didn't think I could ever replace it. But the chef who taught the class at Millennium, he said there's going to be a mouthfeel that you won't get without animal foods. And now I find that too heavy. I feel I really enjoy the more refreshing,
lighter.
Yeah,
so you've been on a real journey yourself, Edie. Thank you so much for calling in. And Edie talks about cheese. I know that a trick, and I'll turn to you, Christine, that friends of mine who are vegan is that they really lean on nutritional yeast. So tell me about that. What is that, and why does it taste like cheese?
I think Avery's a better answer for that question. If I were going to cut out cheese in a pasta dish, I would probably look back to the poor man's Italian method for adding that same sort of thing to a dish of pasta, and that you take some fresh breadcrumbs and you just toast them until they're brown and add salt and then sprinkle that over, and you get the same sort of deeper level of flavor that aged cheese would get. But I'm sure Avery is much better. She's eaten much more nutritional yeast than I have to answer that question.
Well, that it's so funny because there's actually a historical jar of nutritional yeast in the show at the Maine Historical Society. And this has a tie to Maine, and we can talk about that later. But yes, nutritional yeast is a great replacement for cheese because it has that umami flavor. And the simplest way to make a mac and cheese vegan is what Christine described. I would tweak it a little bit in that I would use just some whole wheat flour, but, you know, toasted breadcrumbs, that's great too. Mm-hmm. And then you use some, you know, I use soy milk because it has a really high protein quantity in it, and use a little bit of nutritional yeast, some salt. You've got a real creamy roux that you've just created that's cheesy. Pour it over pasta and you have vegan mac and cheese. Really easy, affordable dish to make at home. And I can tell you that it's been tried and tested on many children. They love it.
Great. Well, we are going to take another break. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're learning all about the variety and benefits of plant-based diets and getting some tips on good veg-centric dishes. Joining me, two food writers, Avery Yale Camilla and Christine Burns Rudilevich. Share your comments and questions. If you're quick, lots are coming in. talk@mainepublic.org. or 1-800-399-3566. An email here from Rosalind. We have followed Veganuary a few times now with the main purpose of learning to new go-to recipes that we can use the rest of the year with greater ease. It's important not to switch out meat for ultra-processed foods or sauces to disguise things like tofu. Instead, it's important to learn new recipes for which there's plenty of advice that bring equally satisfying meals. Then, if you're a meat eater, you can do so from time to time with high quality as a treat. So also other people talking about Beyond Burger and being processed food. And I'm wondering if this is a little bit of like a philosophical debate going on in this community, Avery.
It's not just this community. This is a national debate that's going on. And so, you know, what's happening is that we saw a real trend like in the media, Beyond Meat, Impossible Foods. It was so much reporting and people were investing in these companies. And, you know, there are companies that are selling alternative products that are called meat-based products. And they're not super happy with people wanting to switch it up, right? They're not happy. You know, this is, we're in independent media right now, you know, having this discussion. But like a lot of media these days is very corporate owned. So, you know, so this is a messaging war that's going on. This has been going on for a long time, but this particular battle is being fought right now over the processed food. There's actual science about it if people are interested. And what that science shows is that what I mentioned earlier is that processed meats are very, you know, risky, whereas processed plants do not carry the same risks. Now, you don't want to eat a diet of processed plants 100%, you know? So, but if you're going to choose to have processed food in the form of a burger, choose a Beyond Burger. That's a better choice than a hamburger. So that's what we know from the science, that that's a better choice.
Christine.
I'd like to add into that, in that almost all of the sustainability studies of these alternative meats are based on comparisons of the CAFO produced meats, the industrialized meats, which, you know, is cruel and laden with processes that is detrimental to the environment and probably to people's bodies. But I think that in Maine, we are so lucky to have a group, a very strong group of livestock farmers who take every measure possible to make sure that they're raising their animals with both animal how the animals live and how those animals are killed for our food and the footprint that they leave on the environment. So I just want to make sure that people understand what those comparisons are being made to vis-a-vis what the type of meat that is available here in Maine.
We'll go to Peter, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
Hi, and thank you so much for having me. And this has been a wonderful subject. And I got to say, it's so nice to talk to and thank in person. I was heartbroken to hear that the Vegan Kitchen was leaving the Press Herald. And I love that feature. I've been a vegetarian since traveling around to downtown. Getting the cheapest place to get lunch was Little Lads on Exchange Street, which was an all-vegan joint. And I've been a committed vegetarian for a while, mostly because of their climate impact, and very concerned about that, and that's my work. But one of the things I wanted to bring up was kind of like expanding on the moral impacts of being vegetarian and plant-based eating. Another luminary, your main celebrity, I guess, that I don't think has been mentioned is the newly installed Catholic Bishop of Maine is a practicing vegan, James Ruggieri. I was really looking forward to Avery interviewing him for a profile in the paper, and it never happened. So just wondering if you could talk a little bit about the moral implications of it and how a lot of folks are, you know, bishops are kind of in the news these days. And I thought that was kind of very interesting when I read about it.
Yeah, Peter, you know, interesting, because at the very beginning of the program, I asked Avery if there are reasons that were the same and reasons that were different that people choose vegetarianism. And throughout history, there have been people for whom it's a religious reason or a moral reason. Correct, Avery?
Yes. I mean, I would say it's really just in the last 100 years that it's become detached from religion. Like, this idea that vegetarianism is a secular thing is a completely new idea, because it's always been attached to spiritual traditions. And that's often religion. And here in the U.S., that's often Christianity. And the Christian church has a kind of mixed relationship with vegetarianism, which is too complicated to go into now. But I have heard the same thing about the bishop. I can say I reached out to his office and did request an interview, and I hadn't heard back. But I've heard similar reports, and I would love to know more about the bishop, because there is a very strong tendency in the Catholic Church. Father Sebastian Rall, he was an ascetic Christian vegetarian, which is the more common term is temperance. It means, you know, being very temperate, being very austere in what you're doing. Don't have luxury. Don't have too much. Have just enough. Don't take more than you need. So that's, you know, it's kind of a New England, you know, thrifty sort of approach to life, too. And, you know, Father Rall has been recognized as somebody who was super thrifty. He made his own clothes. He cut his own firewood, made his own food. So people have recognized that. They just have not put the pieces together with the vegetarian movement.
Peter, thank you so much for your call. I'm going to go to an email here from Nancy. Oh, excuse me, a Facebook post from Nancy. And I'll toss this to you, Christine. Can you recommend some suggestions for having more legumes in one's diet, especially for someone I know who is not a fan of them?
Ooh, stealth beaning somebody, huh? It's actually, I think you have to establish a habit. A habit I started probably 4 years ago now is on Sunday afternoon cooking a pot of beans just to have at the ready. Because beans, like, you can open a can of beans, and that's great, and you can open low-sodium can of beans, and that's probably better. But, you know, the beans carry a lot of starch, and they hold on to the sodium that you cook them with. So I cook a bag of local beans. They're becoming more and more prevalent, especially at farmers markets. And Maine Grains offers a wonderful line of beans that are planted by local farmers in rotation with their wheat crops to replenish the soil. So there's a lot of nutrients in these beans. So I cook up a pot of grains and a pot of beans on Sunday afternoon. And then they're just there in my refrigerator to throw into salads to, you know, my chili has become a quarter pound of meat and 2 cups of beans, where previously it would be would have been a pound of meat and, you know, 1 can of beans. And the other thing that you can do with beans is then you can also throw them into sauces. If you have a blender and you want to make a soup, nobody knows what's thickening that soup, if it's cream or if it's rice or if it's beans. So that's one way to sneak it in as well.
Good tips. Here's an email from Flora Brown, who was going to be a call-in guest in the show, but is sick and says she can't speak well. So we are going to read what she wrote at Frinkle Pod Farm in Arundel. Our mission is to help you eat more plants and feel connected to the land, your farmers, and your community. We've been leading plant-based cooking classes for about 10 years. Sometimes we have a guest instructor, for example, coming up. Carol Steingart, who leads tide pooling excursions at Coast Encounters, will be teaching a class on sushi and sea vegetables. We also host a regular pop-up outdoor market during the growing season that features some of our favorite local makers and food producers, all vegan. At our summer day camp, we teach kids age 5 to 9 about all the steps of growing food, including planting and harvesting, as well as compassion for all living beings, even bugs. The kids love harvesting fruits and vegetables and eating them right away. Last year, we cut open a big green cabbage in the field and cut it into pieces. All the kids could not stop asking for seconds and thirds. Parents are amazed and delighted at what their children have tried during the course of a camp week. Big hits with the kids have been fresh spring rolls with peanut dipping sauce. Dips are often a great vehicle for trying new foods. Popsicles made with pureed fruit and a touch of maple syrup. And fresh salsa. So thank you, Flora, for writing in. I'm sorry you were not able to join the program today. Avery, I think this is a great opportunity for, you know, we're hearing about Frinkle Pod Farm in Arundel. What are some other places, sources that you really like, and maybe some events coming up that you could steer people towards?
There's so much going on, and Frinkle Pod is a great resource. They are just lovely. There's tomorrow night, if anyone's near the Causeway restaurant, they're doing a vegan dine out night at 6 o'clock. There is a brand new restaurant with lots of vegan options, vegetarian options, gluten-free options. They also have a whole line of herbs that they've grown themselves, organic. It's called Rooted Heart Cafe, an herbal apothecary. It's in Buxton. In Portland, there's all kinds of new plant-based foods on menus right now because it's Veganuary, so lots of new things. Some that I've seen and tried are the vegan ham and pineapple pizza that Monty's has put on. It's using Midcoast Vegan's ham. There's a vegan meatball sub at $3 Dewey's in the Old Port, which uses the new Veggie Life meatballs that are made in Wells. There's a Reuben, which is a vegan Reuben that's at the Portland Food Co-op right now, which is a collaborative between Tootie's Tempeh, Harvest Maine, 30 Acre Farms, and Big Sky Bread. And so there's a lot of yummy stuff out there, a lot of plant-based foods that Maine food producers are putting together this season.
Great. We'll go to Joanne calling from Naples. Joanne, if you could be quick, that would be great.
I will. I just wanted to tell you I've transitioned from being a meat and potatoes Irish Catholic to completely vegetarian. And I found a product called Seeds of Change, which is organic. It's made in Canada. It's a premix of quinoa and brown rice. And I'm substituting my mother's peppers that used white rice and meat with this quinoa mix and a fish of any kind, cod or tuna. And I'm not Martha Stewart, so they have a lot of options.
That's a great tip, Joanne. Thank you. And Christine, I'm thinking stuffed peppers is the kind of recipe that can have so many different things in them. And that's a great idea from Joanne.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
let's see. We'll try to squeeze in one more. Scott, I'm going to let you go for 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to say that in 1972, I read Diet for a Small Planet that changed my life because it was a political decision to me to stop eating meat. After I closed my leather shop, I continued to do that. But when my daughter lived with me out in Oregon for her second grade, her recollection, her late life recollection, is that her favorite comfort food was stir fry.
Ah, well, Scott, that's going to be the end. Thank you so much for being our last caller, and thank you to my guests here. The show that Avery helped curate is going to reopen on February 10th. Right now, the Maine Historical Society is closed, but it looks at the history, the secret history of vegetarianism in Maine. Christine Burns, Drew Delevage, a food writer and author of Green Plate Special. Today's sound engineer, Sandra Harris. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to learn about interesting and unusual town names in Maine and how they came about. It is the first show in our new series, Name Calling on Maine Calling, Story of Maine's Names. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.